A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello there and welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. We're in quarantine still, so today we're recording remotely and I'm joined with Rich.
Hello.
And Osley.
Hello.
And we thought what better thing to talk about than Half-Life Alyx, because these two here somehow have a lovely PC, VR headset, and they've played Alyx. Rich has finished it.
Osley's
almost near the end. And I have been playing Half-Life 2, so I'm the third best prepared.
It's actually quite apt to talk about this because the entirety of the game takes place in the quarantine zone in City 17. So it's all very apt at the moment.
Yes. So I'm just going to jump straight in. And how does this compare to past Half-Life games? I need to know this because I'm sitting there chomping at the bit, watching Gabe Newell interviews, watching reviews, and just wondering why. I mean, I know why, but I just really want this on PSVR because I don't have a PC.
No, it is so much like a Half-Life game. It's unreal. Like being in City 17 in VR is the best feeling. The game quite literally opens with you stood on a balcony looking up at the currently under construction citadel.
Really?
Yeah. And everything about it is so... It is just Half-Life. There's nothing about it that feels weird. It's not like a sequel that's so later on that it feels different. Or everything about Alyx the entire way through feels like a Half-Life game through and through. And it really goes to show that Valve can still do what they do best. This is their grand return to gaming after, you know, for single player experiences for 9 years.
I mean, let's not forget Artifact. Come on.
that's apparently about to be rebooted, which I'm kind of keen to try. But it shows that Valve still know what they're doing. It shows that, you know, Alyx has had a lot of criticism since it was first announced in, I think it was November, it was announced October, about the fact that it's VR only, because people are seeing it as like, this is just a means of them selling more Valve Indexes, which you don't need a Valve Index to play it. You just need any Steam VR supported headset on PC to play Half-Life Alyx. Even the relatively cheap Windows mixed reality ones work with this game. But it's testament to say that they genuinely do mean it when they say, we built this from the ground up for VR and we're going to do it for VR. And this won't work anywhere else. And that is, after playing it all the way through, it's completely true.
Yeah, because that's kind of like what Gabe and all of Valve are sort of like brought forward, that Half-Life is to bring sort of tech forward. That's kind of why they stopped doing the episodes and things like that, because they felt like they were just staggering in sort of the same sort of area as they did with Half-Life 2. But what I want to know is, like, moving around in this game, do you have a bunch of different options, or is it just the whole teleport gimmick?
Yeah, you have used teleporting, which is what I use. You've also got dash teleporting, which instead of like blink teleporting, which is the standard one, you teleport, your screen goes a bit black for like 2-3 frames, and then it teleports you to that destination. With dash teleporting, it dashes your character towards the teleport location where you want to go to, so basically it just zooms into it essentially. And then you've got locomotion, which is basically you just moving around. You press something on your like round thing if you're using a Vive wand, and you just press forward and you go that location. And there's also locomotion, which you, I think, you wave your hand around.
There's
a difference,
because I was obviously through this is using teleporting, because I don't think you really cope well with locomotion.
No, I get a lot. I get a lot of motion sickness with VR, especially in stuff where you're being moved forcibly. So like, for example, in Elite Dangerous, when you're controlling your ship and all that, it makes me feel really vile and just sick, and I can't play that for like about 5 minutes, and I feel horrible for about 5 hours after that. But with teleporting, it's a really big like saving grace, essentially.
Big question here. I jumped in a big question quickly. Is it cheating to teleport around the map? Can you sort of teleport out of the way of enemies? Like if a head crab's coming at you,
can you just go? Yeah, you can just teleport out of the way, but in the same way you can move around in the original Half-Life games, you can step to the side in normal motion and still dodge a hair crab. I played through basically the entirety of this with the continuous locomotion. I was kind of concerned about it as well. There's a game I play in VR called Hot Dogs, Horseshoes, and Hand Grenades, which has a very unique traversal method called Arm Swinger, where you literally hold down a button and you swing your arms with your controllers in hand, and it moves you in that direction. And it sounds really stupid and it looks really dumb from the outside, but when you're in the game, I could play that game for hours and hours on end, moving around in like real time and not feel sick. Whereas something like Boneworks, which was like the first big full VR game before Alex came out, that I've been playing that with continuous locomotion, and that makes me feel awful, and I can't gather why that H3 doesn't make me feel awful, Boneworks does, and then playing through Alex on continuous motion the whole way through, absolutely fine through the whole thing. I think it's that they've managed to take, I don't know how they've done it, but they've made continuous motion not make you feel absolutely disgusting, whereas like I said, what is on paper the exact same thing at Boneworks, it does feel horrible.
See, that sounds promising to me, because as much as like I know teleportation can help players like Osley, like, I think I'd want to play more like that, just because me looking in, it still looked alien to teleport around VR games, and I sort of wonder how does that really work after you're like going for like maybe 30-40 minutes to an hour, however long. What was your longest stint, both of you, underneath the headset?
Definitely about 2 hours. I've had to take breaks from both of my playthroughs just to basically just to recover stamina, because the main thing is I walk about an hour a day, and it still takes a toll on you, like bodily wise, because you're moving around, you're unintentionally dodging stuff that you don't think that you should be dodging it, which is weird to explain, but you do end up like dodging it.
That's crouching and stuff as well, crawling through vents and things. You still do that in Alex as well.
And it gets really tiring on your body, but if that wasn't an issue, I could easily go for like 5-6 hours or something like that.
Okay. I think for me it's about 3 or 4 because time, especially in something like Alex, where it's just so engrossing, time just flies.
Because I did see on your Instagram story last night, Rich, you look like you just escaped from some sort of prison. You look so tired.
I was knackered. I mean, you have headset face where you've got the markings of the soft part over your face. There was a point where there was just the felt piece was just tickling my nose the entire time. And I had to kind of shut it off in my mind to continue playing the game. But it does take it out of you. It is completely knackering. Thankfully, there's not as much movement in this. It's not like playing Beat Saber, which is, a full-on workout. I think with how I looked on Instagram last night, I think that was more just the emotional punch that comes at the end of the game, which I'm not going to spoil, A, for the viewers, and B, for Osley.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff to take in with Half-Life Alyx towards the end.
Is there anything you want to go into in terms of like the narrative? Because we know this is a prequel and things like that, but I wanted to deeper into what they may not have shown, but isn't a massive spoiler.
So for a bit of context in the game, you're playing as Alyx, obviously, 5 years before the events of Half-Life 2, so before Gordon ends up on the train coming in City 17. And you're already in City 17, and you're working with your father, Eli, and you're working with a guy called Russell, who is interestingly absent from the games after Half-Life Alyx, and kind of not a spoiler, he doesn't die or anything. Why he's not present in the games, I think we'll have an intriguing revelation, or he might turn up in when Valve supposedly continue with the games after this, because the success of this has been absolutely incredible. But there's a big floating thing in the middle of the quarantine zone, which is just a big walled off area of City 17. It's kind of like City 17 meets Ravenholm, and that's literally where they dump you at the beginning of the game. It plays out almost like a horror game the whole way through, because you've got so many creatures and things to worry about, as well as the Combine. And there's this big thing called the Vault in the sky. It's holding a weapon that the Combine are going to use, and you think, oh no, this is the end of all humanity, we're going to try and stop it. And that's basically what Half-Life Alyx is. But I think the most interesting thing, that the sort of world building as well as being within that game, is because you've got Russell on a headset. I know Ozzy's just about to get to this point. Russell's telling you about the world before the Seven-Hour War, so the world that we would like supposedly know, because obviously Alyx isn't very... Obviously, Alyx is only 19 in this game, so during the events of the Seven-Hour War, I don't know how old she is or whether she was even born. I can't think of the timeline off the top of my head, but she's asking Russell about what the world was like before the events of the Combine taking over. So she's asked, like, I think there's one point where she's going through the dark and she's like, just talk to me about anything because I'm terrified. And Russell tells you what a club sandwich is. And then there's a point that I said I was just about to get to where there's loads of vodka everywhere, and she and Russell's explaining to Alyx, who's, you know, never had a drink before, what vodka is. It's like, it's really good, but it's also bad because it's technically poison, and Alyx can't get her head around it. So seeing that world, or seeing an early version of that world, and hearing stories of before the Resonance Cascade, before the Black Mesa incident, is the most... it's fascinating just to stand and listen to. But it also does help when you're going through a dark tunnel with only a tiny flashlight and you know there's headcrabs scuttling around.
So through all of this, is it a lot of fighting headcrabs and early Combine? Because from what I've seen in footage, especially some that Osley shared with me a little earlier, is interesting ways to stop headcrabs getting at you, and sort of like, I really like the motion of how you can move like a human rather than a video game character, like as you did, Osley, you opening a door and just popping out little poison headcrabs.
Yeah. So in this clip that I showed Benroy, I was against three poison headcrabs behind a door, and I slightly, like, you can't do this in a video game, but you can, like a normal 2D video game essentially, you can slightly open the door, put your pistol in, and then shoot it without even looking at it. And they managed to also push the door open, which freaked me out, and I just ended up unloading the entire clip onto it, which was probably hilarious for someone watching it back anyway. But the way that the game kind of like introduces you to combat is it starts it off with a zombie head crab, and because they're slow, because they're easy to take down, it's a nice way to like introduce you into those mechanics. And then it starts you out with a normal head crab, and I can't remember exactly how it goes, but I do remember like taking it down really easily. And I didn't actually get like attacked by a head crab until like about 3-4 hours into the game. Like maybe I was good at the game or something, but it did feel natural and it felt quite easy just to take them down. And then much later on in the game, you actually get into proper full-on shooting against Combine.
Okay, so what is it like having a head crab jump on your head? Have you experienced, like, because that sounds like, I've got a fear of the Alien franchise because I hate facehuggers, but I love watching it. So I've got the same thing of head crabs. Like, is it just suffocating and terrifying when they get on you?
Yeah, when you're playing a normal Half-Life game, you're like, okay, don't damage me, please. You just want it to get away from you. You just try and shoot it. When you're in VR, it is so immersive. It really feels like it's going to jump on you and like literally tear off your face or like breed your brain or whatever.
Yeah.
In VR, it does attach to your chest rather than your head. And you can see why, because you want to shoot it and you don't want to like shoot your head off. Especially with a barnacle, there's a literal like just a line down your thing, and your whole screen just goes red. And it's so disorientating. It's so weird. And when a head crab does attach to you, your main instinct is to just grab it off of you and like throw it away. It's so weird. It's really hard to explain. It really feels like it's there, but shooting it is just like satisfying in a way. But it really feels like it's like actually attacking you.
They've definitely changed up how they go about it, though. Like, when you play Half-Life 2, as you know, Benroy, right now, whenever you spot a head crab, chances are the first thing it will do is jump, and it comes straight at you. In Alyx, they haven't done that, and that was why, like, throughout the beginning, because, like, as Ozzy said, you shoot, you have a handful of zombies, and I don't think the head crabs can actually detach from these zombies at the beginning. If you shoot them dead, they're completely dead. And it's only later on, you walk down a corridor, and then all of a sudden you hear, like, a scuttle, and Russell goes, that was a head crab. Like, just a head crab. And all all of a sudden I'm just like, oh god, it's going to jump out at me at any point. But they've changed up how their animation cycle works in Alyx. They have more of like a sort of a little wind up to their attacks. They sort of like, because you know, in the game they raise their sort of front legs and they walk on little nubs. They kind of do a little like almost like a little roar animation into that, then they'll jump. So you do get when you spot a head crab, you do get that moment to dispense like three pistol shots to take it down before it jumps at you. But they do seem a little bit thick, the head crabs. They're not very accurate, and when they do land, they do sort of fall over. They don't just land on their feet and spin around. They sort of flop around a bit. It's quite funny actually. But as Ozzy says, yeah, there's only one point in the game that I got actually latched on by a head crab, and yeah, you just sort of have to scurry around and try and pull it off your chest, and it is the weirdest feeling.
The scariest ones are the poison head crabs, because they've got little tiny heads.
I hate poison head crabs in Half-Life 2 anyway. There's a point when you pick up the flashlight for the first time, and you just turn around and you see like three of them scuttling towards you, and my mind went, they're poison head crabs. And my first instinct thought, wait, if there's poison head crabs in this, they're going to have the poison zombie, and the poison zombie is probably the scariest villain or scariest enemy that I've ever encountered in a video game. I hate them. I hate them so much. Thankfully, they're not in this. There's only normal zombies.
When
the poison one showed up, because the poison ones work in the same way, you know, they attach onto you, you get the green sort of status effect, and your health goes all the way down and starts to build back up again, and they are stronger as well. So yeah. They don't have the fast ones, thankfully. They're not in this.
That's good.
Because they would be awful. But they've changed up the the enemy encounters and the combat enough to suit VR, but they've not changed it so much that it doesn't feel like Half-Life. Again, there's nothing in this game that doesn't feel like Half-Life at all. So they've continued the series so incredibly well.
Sure, I think I should mention as well, because it's probably the second biggest part apart from head crabs, is the gravity gloves, because obviously this is set before the gravity gun has been invented. So how do the gloves work compared to the actual gravity gun?
So with the gravity gun, you literally just aim at something, if you're on PC, you press right mouse button and it comes towards you, and then you can like shoot it off somewhere into the ether, essentially.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
With the gravity gloves, it kind of works in the same way. You point at something and then you have to hold the trigger if you're on the Vive, like using the ones, and then you pull the trigger and then you have to sort of like, how do you do that? Flick it back towards
it's like
you?
It's like holding a fishing rod and you've got it on the end of your line and you have to pull it towards you and then catch it.
That's it, yeah. And then you have to, when it's in midair, you have to press your trigger again to close your fist to essentially just catch it. And it's a bit tricky to get hold of first because you need to aim it, and then like flicking it takes a bit of practice, but once you get it down, it's nice actually. Yeah, it's quite satisfying. It feels really natural. And what I don't like in VR is when in VR games is when you have to like crouch down to pick something off the floor and they don't give you that motion to like help you out picking it up. So you have to like physically put your hands all the way down on the floor. Sometimes you do end up smashing the floor with your controllers, and then you have to pick it up. But thankfully, it really helps you out on this.
That's almost like a cheat to making VR gaming even better, because obviously you don't have to bend down as much. You can just ding. Oh, I basically got the force, even though it's a gravity gun sort of thing.
You can play this entire game sitting down, standing up, whatever. Like they accommodate for whatever. Your comfort is or ability is, and it, like there are games that have a means of like teleporting items into your hand which are quite easy, but this feels the most natural. Like genuinely every single teeny little detail that they could have put into this game they have done in VR, even down to reloading and weapon switching and stuff. It's so simple and so intuitive. You just have, because there's only three weapons in the entire game, and when you always have the weapon in your hand. You don't need to hold a button to keep hold of it, and you can switch to it by bringing up like a little menu on the Oculus. You just press down the thumbstick and it comes up with a menu, and you just literally move your hand to pick which one. And then when you need to reload it, you can drop the mags out of your pistol by pressing a button, and then you just, which depending on which weapon you're holding in your hand, you just reach behind your shoulder into your backpack and you pull out what would be the correct mag for the gun. It's so simple and it's so intuitive. And because there are VR games out there that have made a real faff out of doing inventory management, whereas Alex has streamlined it down so much that it's really simple. Like if this was your first big VR game, which for a lot of people it is, for a lot of people it will be, because there are so many people who went out and bought VR for this game solely, they lead you in really, really well.
They really do, yeah.
This is making me want to buy.
I was going to say, how are you doing?
I mean, I haven't bought any VR unit yet. If I was going to get one, it'd probably be the PSVR, because lo and behold, I am.
Yeah.
I'm a Mac, like the old adverts used to say. But do you think this is ever going to come to PSVR or anywhere else?
I think it will. Yeah, because if you look back on every single, I think it's on the main like series. I haven't looked up Blue Shift or Opposing Force or anything like that, but they have released on other platforms. Like for me, the first Half-Life game, I played that first on PS2, in fact, and I've also played Half-Life 2 on the Xbox, like the very first Xbox as well. That wasn't my first playthrough. Like I did play on PC, that one. But they do have a good reputation of going onto consoles and like porting all these, all of them to them. If the PS5 does get a PSVR like equivalent, then I think there is a very good chance that that will come to PS5.
I was going to say, because in terms of the Source 2 engine in this game, it is absolutely beautiful. It is the best looking VR game I think that's ever been made. And just seeing the advancements of the Source engine, seeing the advancements of because obviously the thing that the Source engine was really, really like critically praised for back in 2004 was its facial animations. And the same is to be said with the Source 2 engine and with Half-Life Alyx. Everything looks absolutely stunning. And I didn't really get the chance to look and like see any of my temps and usage and things on my PC while I had the headset on, obviously, so I can't really tell how well optimized it is. I know that I've got a very high-end system, but I don't know how that would translate to the PS4. But as Osley said, I think because the PS5 is going to have PSVR support. As far as I know, it's going to be continuing on support with the original PSVR. For the PS4, they're going to release, obviously, a new version for PS5 as well, but they'll both still work. But I think the power of the PS5 should quite happily support that game, especially within the Source engine, because, as Ozzy said, the Source engine game's been ported to various platforms and it's been fine. So it wouldn't surprise me, and I think I don't see it as a game that wouldn't work. The only thing I would say is the number of face buttons on the PlayStation Move controllers, but you could probably get away with how it works. Obviously, the only downside is you don't have the full ability to move like 360 degrees like you would with, say, a Vive, which Osley has, or a Rift, which I do, because obviously you've got to be facing the camera. But there will be ways around that as well, and obviously the lack of thumbstick doesn't help, so you may be stuck down to either teleporting or doing the weird thing where you press a button in just to move in the direction you're facing, which probably feels worse than using an actual thumbstick. But, you know, I don't think it's impossible. I think it would make a lot of sense for them to release it on PSVR, but I don't think we'd be seeing that until PS5. If they release it for PS4, I'll eat my words, but I don't think we will.
Fair enough.
They've even got other stuff like Portal 2, Team Fortress 2, and also Counter-Strike Global Offensive that have come to consoles as well. Mm-hmm. So there is a very good chance that it will.
I had a question, but it also leads into the Twitter question we got about this game from, I'm going to bastardize his name, sorry, CEO, I'm just going to say Joe because Joe's at the end of their handle on Twitter. And is, do you think that this game will bring VR out of the fun gimmick and, you know, bring it into the game mainstream? Do you think this is like VR's moment to be like, you're not a gimmick anymore. You're the, as we say, I quote, the big boys now.
Yes.
I was going to say no.
Oh, really?
Because right now, VR is still way too expensive. Mainly like Steam VR is just way too expensive. Once it becomes like really affordable, once there is, like overall, in terms of like game development, this will be like the groundbreaking game that will like break VR into like everything out there. But for the consumer, it is so expensive to get a VR system, let alone just like a full PC setup. Like it costs like almost around like $2,000 just for something like really solid, really decent, mm-hmm. For both VR and also like a PC. But once that becomes affordable, then I think like VR will definitely stop becoming a gimmick and start becoming like a serious thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I obviously said yes, because I think that, as Osley said, this is the first big groundbreaking game. I mean, it's not really, because Boneworks obviously came first, which was December, I think. But again, it's a relatively new studio. It's an unknown IP, and as much as everyone's like, this is the best VR game I've ever played, this is something established. It's got that position in the industry to be like, everyone's actually going to take notice of this. And as I said, there's a lot of people who have gone out of their way to get VR. No, it's not the cheapest way in, especially not with PC. But PS4, I think if they released PSVR 2 or just whatever they have it for the PS5, and they say Half-Life Alyx is a launch title for it, I think they're going to make an absolute killing, in the same way that they have with Steam VR machines and things like that. I think the numbers for Half-Life Alyx on release day was about 42,000 people playing it. And that's really? 42,000 VR headsets all going at the same time, which is incredible. But I think, this is the benchmark to say, look, this is how you do this. It's kind of the same back in 1998 with Half-Life 1, when they said, hey, shooting's all about killing stuff and not caring about any kind of narrative. And then Valve turns around and goes, no, actually, this is how you do it. And they've done the exact same thing with VR now. So I think this is a good start. I think it goes to show that A, it's possible to do something immersive and narrative and similar to Half-Life 1 and 2, or just all the Half-Life games. You play through this thing all the way through with no cutscenes, no big skips, nothing like that. It just, you just play through the whole deal. Even on the loading screens, you can see a map, and it literally just shows you the route you've taken from the beginning of the game all the way through to when you get to the vault at the end of the game.
Okay.
And I think, yeah, that's what future developers will look at and say, yeah, this can work, this will work. And yeah, as I said, there are more people who are going to have their mind changed to maybe giving VR a go. And if they, like I said, if they release it on the PSVR, that's going to be really good, because PSVR overall, if you got a PS4 with a headset, would set you back maybe £400-£500, which is, you know, as Ozzy said, maybe a quarter of how much it could be to do it on PC, like full all out. So,
that's what I'll be doing.
Yeah, I mean, I've got PSVR as well, and I think it's fantastic for what you pay for, or for how much you pay for and what you get. It does the job. No, it's not as good as my PC with the Rift, but that's a given. But PS4 VR is fantastic. So, yeah, I think it can open this new thing, but I still personally don't see VR as the future. I just see VR as a really cool parallel. I don't think it's going to become the norm by any stretch, but I also don't want them to make Half-Life 3 as a VR game. I'd rather have that as a normal game. But give me another Half-Life VR game. Absolutely. Just don't make 3 Half-Life.
I will say that this is the most immersive VR game I've ever played in my life.
Yep.
It is, it's just everything about it. There's like so much detail into it. I remember like at one point I was trying, like, you know those puzzles that you do with the, I can't remember.
The electric wire puzzles on the multi-sol.
Yeah. And then you like move the globe around with your hand and like move the thingy.
Yeah.
I was standing in front of my wall and I didn't, I was trying to figure out why my Vive wasn't tracking. And I was literally like waving it in front of the wall. And then I moved my hand forward a tiny bit and smash it into the wall. And then I had to like physically move the device and turn around and like reset my position and everything. But there hasn't been a VR game that has ever done that before. Like, you just lose yourself from your front room or your bedroom or wherever you're playing into this Half-Life world.
Brilliant. I mean, is Half-Life back now? That's the big question. Because we've had interviews that they want to do more. But do you think Half-Life as a franchise could come back and be with us once again after this long time?
Definitely, yeah.
And I'm not saying why, but yes.
Okay. And I've got to say...
Because they're a big spoiler.
Yeah. I won't say anything else apart from... Do you think we get Portal in this? Because Portal in this might destroy you.
The events of episode 2 relate to the Borealis, and that merges the things together. So, you know, if they... You know, Valve have already seen with the sales and the figures for this game that people do still care about this series after 12 years. So that's why there's been people screaming on the internet about it, and why I'm screaming on the internet about it. people still do care. And, you know, as you said, Gabe has said, and people at Valve have said, you know, we're basically back. Like, we're doing this again. Because, yes, they could happily continue just making a killing with Steam. They know that, but it's like... fine, we can see why you're going to happily do that, because you're still making money, but you can still do that and still make the games that we love. And the fact that they've come back after 12 years and done a game that everyone has just completely critically praised, they've still got it. And from how things look come the end of Half-Life Alyx, I don't think this is a flash in the pan for Half-Life. I don't think they'd have waited this long to just do it once and then leave it again. I really hope they don't, but I don't see them just stopping.
It's crazy that it took a new generation of Valve employees to do it, because Gabe's obviously sitting there playing Dirt 2 every day. But just Half-Life being back is kind of what I need in my heart right now.
It's still kind of surreal. Like, playing through all of this and just being back in that, seeing a brand new official game for that, like, it's weird. It's almost odd to think we're actually talking about this.
It is, yeah. Like, when it's first announced, I didn't really believe it. And then about like a month later, when they didn't really show anything for a while, I was like, I think it's going to be delayed. I don't think that they're really going to release it, because they had that long period of time during like January or February where they just had this is coming March 2020, but we don't have a definite release date. And I was kind of like, not necessarily worried, but sort of like kind of expecting it to be delayed, because they've got that whole Half-Life Valve time thing going on. But to be playing it, and especially like after Doom Eternal, I was like, oh yeah, Half-Life is coming out. After like playing it, it's just and being in there, it's just like, my god, this is Half-Life. It's incredible. Yeah.
I mean, after the quarantine's over, I will be finding a way to play this.
As said, I will get you set up, Ben Roy, and I'm just going to leave you in when we're back in the office the entire night, just playing Alex.
The whole time. Do you think this is contender for Game of the Year? One last question.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, it's going to be a really hard year because, I mean, Doom Eternal for me, as you know, I've been so stoked for, and that did kind of overshadow Half-Life Alyx's excitement because, again, I think in the same as Osley, it's kind of like, I don't really believe this is happening. This isn't real, surely. Mm. And then when it started, it's like, oh God, it is real. So the fact that, you know, the first two big games I played of this year are both Game of the Year contenders. Next up is Resi 3, and it's just like, good God, it's going to be a hard year, but it's going to be an amazing year for games.
Yeah, there is so much this year that's going to be amazing. I've just played Will-O-The-Wisps as well, which is phenomenal. There are so few things about it that is really brilliant. And then there's going to be Cyberpunk 2077, if it is going to be released in September as well, which
and Last of Us 2 could. don't forget to mention that front to back.
I was getting I was like, someone say Last of Us 2.
Last of Us 2 as well, which can be like the big thing as well. Just all of those games, like I think at the end of the year, choosing like awards for games is going to be incredibly difficult.
Should we just give every good game a Game of the Year award? Let's just not bother everyone. They just turn around at the Game Awards and go, surprise, the entire list of nominees you've all won.
Yeah. We should do that.
It's definitely going to be Game of the Year material. Absolutely.
Either way, we win if we play them all. But I think that's going to be it for today, Wednesday's episode of the What Culture Game podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at WC Gaming, I believe.
Yes, W Culture Gaming.
W Culture Gaming. I always get that wrong. And you can follow Osley at
Newt and Chill.
And you can follow Rich at
Pick Up Change Toe.
And you can follow me at Ben Roy Turner. And don't forget, we're pretty much on most pod services known to man. But, you know, if you use the hashtag WCGP if you've got any more questions. And we'll probably get to them later on the week or next week. But again, I've been Ben Roy. I've been here with Osley and Rich. And that is us for today. Later.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.